If a man steps on a stranger's foot in the marketplace, he makes a polite apology and offers an explanation. This place is so crowded. If an elder brother steps on his younger brother's foot, he says, "Sorry," and that is that. If a parent treads on his child's foot, nothing is said at all. The greatest politeness is free of all formality. Perfect conduct is free of concern. Perfect wisdom is unplanned. Perfect love is without demonstrations. Perfect sincerity offers no guarantee.
All that is great, all that is beautiful, all that is true and real is always spontaneous. You cannot plan it. The moment you plan it, everything goes wrong. The moment planning enters, everything becomes unreal. But this has happened to humanity. Your love, your sincerity, your truth, everything has gone wrong because you have planned it. Because you have been taught not to be spontaneous. You have been taught to manipulate yourself, to control, to manage, and not to be a natural flow. You have become rigid, frozen, dead. Life knows no planning. It itself is enough. Do the trees plan? How to grow? How to mature? How to come to flowers? They simply grow without even becoming conscious of the growth. There is no self-consciousness. There is no separation. Whenever you start planning, you have divided yourself. You have become two. The one who is controlling and the one who is controlled. A conflict has arisen. Now you will never be at peace. You may succeed in controlling, but there will be no peace. You may not succeed in controlling, then too, there is going to be no peace. Whether you succeed or fail, ultimately you will come to realize that you have failed. Your failure will be a failure. Your success is going also to be a failure. Whatsoever you do, your life will be miserable. This division creates ugliness. Then you are not one. And beauty belongs to oneness. Beauty belongs to a harmonious whole. All culture, all civilization, all societies make you ugly. All morality makes you ugly. Because it is based on division, on control. I have heard, once Balsam was traveling with a beautiful in a beautiful coach with three horses. But he was wandering continuously. For 3 days he has been traveling, but not even once any horse has neighed. What has happened to the horses? Then suddenly on the 4th day, a passing peasant shouted at him to relax the control. He relaxed the control and suddenly all the 3 horses started neighing. They came to be alive. For 3 days continuously they were dead, dying. This has happened to you all, to the whole humanity. You cannot neigh. And unless a horse is neighing, the horse is dead. Because neighing means he is enjoying. It is an overflow. But you cannot neigh. You are dead. Your life has not in any way an overflowing sound, a dance that happens to the energy when it is too much flowering is always a luxury. There is not a necessity. No tree needs flowers as a necessity. Roots are enough. Flowering is always luxurious. Flowers come only when the tree has too much. It needs to give. It needs to save. Whenever you have too much, life becomes a dance, a celebration. But the society doesn't allow you to dance, to celebrate. So the society has to look that you should never have more energy than necessary. You are always allowed to live on the starvation level. You are not allowed to be too much, because once you are too much, you cannot be controlled. And society wants to control you. It is a domination very subtle. Every child is born overflowing. Then we have to cut the energy source. We have to prune the child from here and there so that he becomes controllable. And the root of all control is to divide the child in two. Then you need not bother. He himself will do the controlling. Then you need not bother. He himself will be the enemy of his own self. So tell to the child, this is wrong. Don't do this. Suddenly the child is divided. Now he knows what is wrong. Now he knows what part of his being is wrong. And his head becomes the controller. Through division, intellect has become the controller, the master. If you are undivided, you will not have any head. Not that the head will disappear, or that the head will fall down, but you will not be head-oriented. Your total being will be you. Right now you are only the head. The remaining body is just to sustain the head. The head has become the exploiter, the dictator. And this has come through a conflict, a creation of conflict in you. You have been taught this is good and that is bad. The intellect learns it. Then the intellect goes on condemning you. And remember, If you condemn yourself, you will condemn everybody. You will condemn the whole. And a person who condemns himself cannot love. A person who condemns himself cannot pray. A person who condemns himself, for him there is no God, there cannot be. A condemning mind can never enter the divine temple. Only when you dance, only when you are ecstatic, not condemning, only when you are overflowing, with nobody sitting in the control, nobody managing, life becomes a let go. It is not formal, it is natural. Then you enter. Then everywhere is the door. Then from anywhere you can reach the temple. But right now, as you are schizophrenic. Not only when a psychoanalyst will say that you are schizophrenic, you are. There is no need for any psychoanalyst to analyze. The society creates schizophrenics. Division is schizophrenia. You are not one. You are born one. But immediately society starts working. A great surgery is to be done. You are operated continuously to be divided. Then society is at ease. Because you are fighting with yourself, your energy is dissipated in the inner fight. It is never an overflowing. Then you are not dangerous. Overflowing energy can become rebellion. It becomes rebellion. Overflowing energy is always rebellious. Overflowing energy is always in revolution. It is just like a river in flood. It doesn't believe in the banks, in the roots, in the laws. It simply goes on overflowing towards the sea. It knows only one goal, to become the sea. How to become the infinite? Overflowing energy is always moving towards God. But God is missing in our world, not because of science, not because of atheists. It is because of the so-called religious. They have divided you so much that the river goes on fighting with itself. Nothing is left to move. No energy is left. You are so tired. Fighting with yourself, how can you move? How can you move towards the sea? One of the basic laws of Tao, of Lao Tse, of Chuang Tzu is, if you are spontaneous, this is the highest prayer. And you cannot miss God. Whatsoever you do, you will reach Him. So Chuang Tzu never talks about God. The talk is irrelevant. It is not needed. He talks only how to bring the wholeness in you. The holy is irrelevant. When you become whole, you become holy. When your fragments dissolve into one, your life has become a prayer. They never talk about prayer. It is not needed. It's spontaneity. To live as a whole. But if you want to live as a whole, you cannot plan. Who will plan? You cannot decide for tomorrow. You can live only here and now. Who will decide? If you decide, division has entered. Then you will have to manipulate. Who will plan? The future is unknown. and how you can plan for the unknown. If you plan for the unknown, the planning will come from the past. That means the dead will control the alive. Past is dead. Then the past goes on controlling the future. Hence you are so much bored. It is natural. It has to happen. Boredom comes from the past because past is dead and the past is trying to control the future. Future is always an adventure, but you don't allow it to be an adventure. You plan it. Once planned, your life is running on a track. It is not a river. When you run on a track, you know where you are going, what is happening. Everything is just a repetition. Who will plan? If mind plans, mind is always of the past. Life cannot be planned because through planning you are committing a suicide. Life can only be unplanned, moving moment to moment into the unknown. But what is the fear? You will be there to respond. Whatsoever the situation, you will be there to respond. What is the fear? Why plan it? The fear comes because you are not certain whether you will be there or not. You are so unconscious. That is the uncertainty. You are not alert. You are going to give an interview for a job. You go on planning in the mind. What to answer, how to answer, how to enter the office, how to stand, how to sit. But why? You will be there. You can respond, but you are not certain about yourself. You are so unalert. You are so unconscious. You don't know. If you don't plan, something may go wrong. If you are alert, then there is no question. You will be there. So whatsoever the situation demands, you will respond. And remember, this planning is not going to help. Because if you cannot be conscious, cannot be aware in a situation, when you are planning, that planning is also being done in sleep. But you can repeat it so many times, it becomes mechanical. Then the question is asked and you have an answer. The answer is ready-made. You are not needed. It is a fixed pattern. You simply repeat it. You become a mechanical device. You need not be there at all. The answer can be given. It comes from the memory. If you have repeated it so many times, you know, you can rely on it. Through planning, life becomes more and more unconscious. And the more you are unconscious, the more you need planning. Before really dying, you are dead. Alive means responding sensitive. Alive means whatsoever comes. I will be there to respond, and the response will come from me, not from the memory. I will not prepare it. Look the difference. A Christian missionary or a Christian minister, a priest, he prepares his sermon. I have been once to a theological college. There they prepare their ministers, their priests. 5 years training. So I asked them where Jesus was prepared and trained. Who taught him how to speak? Of course, these Christian priests will be dead. There, everything is planned. When you say this, what gesture is to be made? Even the gesture is not allowed to be spontaneous. When you say this, how you have to look? Even the eyes are not allowed to be spontaneous. How you have to stand? When you have to go loud and when you have to whisper? When you have to hammer the table and when not? Everything is planned. I asked them where Jesus was praying. He was not a minister at all. He was not a priest. He never went to any theological college. He was the son of a carpenter. For 2,000 years, Christian priests have been trained, but they have not produced a single Jesus, and they will never produce again, because Jesus cannot be produced. You cannot produce Jesus in effect. And these are factories, theological colleges. There you produce priests. And if these priests are just boring, dead, a burden, it is obvious it is going to be so. There are two types of religions. One, which is of the mind, it is dead. That religion is known as theology. There is another type of religion, the real, the spontaneous. It is not theological. It is mystic. And remember, Hindus have a different theology, Mohammedans different, Christians again different, but religion is the same, the mystic religion. That cannot be different. Buddha and Jesus and John Tzu and Lao Tzu, they are the same because they are not theologians. They are not talking from the head. They are simply pouring from their hearts. They are not logicians, they are poets. They are not saying something from the scriptures. They are not trained for it. They are simply responding to a necessity in you. Their words are not ready-made. Their manners not fixed. Their behavior not planned. Now we will enter Chantasu Sutra. If a man steps on a stranger's foot, in the marketplace, he makes polite apology and offers an explanation. He says, this place is so crowded. Apology is needed because there is no relationship. The other is a stranger. Explanation is needed because there is no love. If there is love, then there is no need for an explanation. The other will understand. If there is love, there is no need for apology. the other will understand. Love always understands. So there is no higher morality than love. Cannot be. Love is the highest love. But if it is not there, then substitutes are needed. Stepping on a stranger's foot in the marketplace, apology is needed. And an explanation also. This place is so crowded. In this reference, one thing has to be understood. In the West, even a husband will offer an apology. A wife will offer an explanation. It means love has disappeared. It means everybody has become a stranger. It means there is no home. Every place has become a marketplace. In the East, it is impossible to conceive. But Westerners think that Easterners are rude. A husband will never give an explanation. No need. Because we are not strangers, and the other can understand. When the other cannot understand, only then apology is needed. And if love cannot understand, what apology is going to do? If the world becomes a home, all apologies will disappear. All explanations will disappear. You give explanation because you are not certain about the other. Explanation is a trick. Trick to avoid conflict. Apology is a device to avoid conflict. But the conflict is there. You are afraid of the conflict. This is a civilized way to get out of the conflict. You have stepped on a stranger's foot. You look violence in his eyes. He has become aggressive. He will hit you. Apology is needed. Apology will subside his anger. It is a trick. You need not be authentic in your apology. It is just a social device. It works as a lubricant. And then you give an explanation just to say that I am not responsible. The place is so crowded. It is a marketplace. Nothing can be done. It was to happen. Explanation says that I'm not responsible. Love is always responsible. Whether the place is crowded or not. Because love is always aware and alert. You cannot shift the responsibility to the situation. You are responsible. Look at this phenomenon. Apology is a device, just like a lubricant, to avoid conflict. Explanation is shifting the responsibility on something else. You don't say that I was unconscious, unaware, that's why I stepped on your foot. You say the place is so much crowded. A religious person cannot do this. And if you go on doing this, you will never become religious. Because religion means taking on the responsibility. that is there, not avoiding, not escaping. Because the more responsible you are, the more awareness will arise out of it. The less you feel responsible, the more and more unconscious you will become. Whenever you feel that you are not responsible, you will go to sleep. And this has happened not only in individual relationship. In all levels of society this has happened. Marxism says that the society is responsible for everything. A man is poor, society is responsible. A man is a thief, society is responsible. You are not responsible. No individual is responsible. That's why communism is anti-religious. Not because it denies God. Not because it says there is no soul. But because of this, it shifts the whole responsibility to the society. You are not responsible. Look at the religious attitude, which is totally different, qualitatively different. A religious man thinks himself responsible. If there is someone begging, if there is a beggar, I am responsible. The beggar may be at the other end of the earth. I may not know him. I may not come across his path. But if a beggar is there, I am responsible. If a war goes on anywhere, in Israel, in Vietnam, anywhere, I am not participating in it in any visible way, but I am responsible. I am here. I cannot shift the responsibility to society. And what do you mean when you say society? Where this society is? This is one of the greatest escapes. Only individuals exist. You will never come across the society. You will never be able to pinpoint this is society. Everywhere individual is in existence. Society is just a word. Where is society? Old ancient civilizations played a trick. They said God is responsible. Fate is responsible. Now communism plays the same game. Says society is responsible. But where is society? God may be somewhere. Society is nowhere. Only individuals are there. Religion says you are. Rather, I am responsible. No explanation is needed to avoid this. And remember one thing more. Whenever you feel that you are responsible for all the ugliness, for all the mess, anarchy, war, violence, aggression, suddenly you become alert. Responsibility penetrates your heart and makes you aware. When you say the place is too much crowded, you can go on walking sleepily. Really, you stepped on the stranger's foot, not because the place is crowded, but because you are unconscious. You are walking like a somnambulist, a man walking in his sleep. When you walked on his foot, suddenly you became aware because there is danger now. You give the apology, you fall asleep. Again, you say the place is crowded, you start moving. I have heard about one simple villager He had come to the city for the first time. On the platform at the station, someone stepped on his foot and said, "Sorry." Then he went in a huddle, someone again clasped and he said, "Sorry." Then he went into a theater and someone almost knocked him and he said, "Sorry." The villagers said, "This is beautiful. We never knew this trick. Do whatever you want to do with anybody and say sorry." So he hit hard the man who was coming and said sorry. What you are really doing when you say sorry, your sleep is broken. You were walking in a dream. You must have been dreaming, imagining. Something was going on in the mind. And then you stepped. Not that the place is crowded. You would have stepped even if there was no one. Even then you would have stepped on someone. It is you, your unconsciousness, your unconscious behavior. A Buddha cannot step, even if it is a marketplace. Because he moves with full consciousness. Whatsoever he is doing knowingly. And if he steps on your foot, that means he has stepped knowingly. There must be some purpose. It may be just to help you awake. Just to make you awake, he may have stepped on your foot. But he will not say that the place is crowded. He will not give any explanation. Explanations are always deceptive. They look logical, but they are false. You give explanations only when you have to hide something. You can watch and observe in your own life. This is not a theory. This is a simple fact of everybody's experience. That you give explanations only when you want to hide something. Truth needs no explanation. The more you lie, the more explanations are needed. There are so many scriptures because man has lied so much. Then explanations are needed. Because how to hide a lie? You have to give an explanation. Then this explanation will need further explanation, and it goes on and on. It is an infinite rigorous. And even with the last explanation, nothing is explained, the basic lie remains the lie. You cannot convert a lie into a truth just by explaining it. Nothing is explained by explanations. You may think it happened. Mullah Nasruddin was on his first air trip, so he was afraid, but he didn't want anybody to know. It happens to everybody on the first air trip. Nobody wants that this is the first air trip. He wanted to behave nonchalantly. He walked very bravely. That braveness was an explanation that I had been always traveling in the aeroplane. Then he sat in his chair. He wanted to say something just to make himself at ease, because whenever you start talking, you become brave. Through talk, you feel less fear. So he told to the man who was sitting by the side, another passenger. Nasruddin looked out of the window and said, "Look, what height! People appear like ants." The other man said, "Sir, we have not yet taken off. Those are ants." Explanations cannot hide anything. Rather, on the contrary, they reveal. If you can look, if you have eyes, every explanation is transparent. It would have been better if he was silent. But don't try silence as an explanation. As an explanation, it is of no use. Your silence will be revealing. Your words will reveal. It is better not to be a liar. Then you need not give any explanation. It is better to be true. It is the easiest thing to be true and to be authentic. If you are afraid, it is better to say that I am afraid. And accepting the fact, your fear will disappear. Acceptance is such a miracle. When you accept that you are afraid and you say, "This is my first trip," suddenly you will feel a change coming into you. Because the basic fear is not fear, the basic fear is the fear of the fear. No one should know that I am afraid. No one should know that I am a coward. But everybody is a coward in a new situation. And in a new situation, to be brave will be foolish. To be coward only means that the situation is so new, your mind cannot supply any answers. The past cannot give the answers. So you are trembling. But this is good. Why try to supply an answer from the mind? Tremble and let the answer come from your present consciousness. You are sensitive, that's all. Don't kill this sensitivity through explanations. Next time when you try to give an explanation, be alert. What you are doing? Trying to hide something? Trying to explain away something? Nothing. Nothing like this will be of any help. A man who had become newly rich, went to a beach, the most costly, most expensive, most exclusive. And he was spending madly, just to influence people all around. The next day, his wife, while swimming, drowned. She was carried to the shore. A crowd gathered. So he asked, "What are you doing now?" One man said that we are going to give artificial air to your wife. Artificial breathing. The man said, "Nothing doing. Give the real thing. I can pay for it." whatsoever you do, whatsoever you don't do, whatsoever you say, whatsoever you don't say, reveals you. Everywhere is mirror all around. Every other person is a mirror. Every situation is a mirror. And what do you think? Whom you are deceiving? And if it becomes a habit to deceive, ultimately you would have deceived yourself and no one else. It is your life which you are wasting in deceptions. John Tuzzle says, explanations so that you are not true, you are not authentic. If an elder brother steps on his younger brother's foot, he says sorry, and that is that. Two brothers, then the relationship is more intimate. The other is not any stranger. Then no explanation is needed. The brother simply says sorry. He accepts the fault. He says, I have been unconscious. He is not shifting the responsibility on somebody else. He accepts it. And that is that. The relationship is more closer. If a parent treads on his child's foot, nothing is said at all. There is no need. The relationship is even more intimate. Closer. There is love. And that love will do. No substitute is needed. No explanation. No apology. The greatest politeness is free of all formality. The greatest politeness is free of all formality. Perfect conduct is free of concern. Perfect wisdom is unplanned. Perfect love is without demonstrations. Perfect sincerity offers no guarantee. But all these perfections need one thing, and that is this spontaneous awareness. Otherwise, you will always have false points. You will always have false faces. You can be sincere, but if you have to make any effort, then that sincerity is just formal. You can be loving, but if your love needs effort, if your love is that type which Dale Carnegie talks about, how to influence people and win friends, if that type of love is there, it cannot be real. You have been manipulating it. Even friendship is a business then. Beware of Dale Carnegie's. These are dangerous people. They destroy all that is real and authentic. They show you how to win friends. They teach you tricks, techniques. They make you efficient. They give you the know-how. But love has no know-how. It cannot have. Love needs no training. And friendship is not something which you have to learn. A learned friendship will not be a friendship. It will be just an exploitation. You are exploiting the other and deceiving him. you are not true. This is a business relationship. But in America, everything has become business. Friendship and love also. Dale Carnegie's books have sold in millions of copies, hundreds of editions, only next to Bible. Because nobody knows now how to be a friend. It has to be learned. Sooner or later there are going to be colleges for love, training courses, even by post. Lessons you can learn and apply. And the problem consists if you succeed in it. Then you are lost forever. Because the real will never happen to you. Then the door is completely closed. Once you become efficient in a certain thing, the mind rests. The mind says, this is the start touch. And you know it well, so why choose another path? Mind is always for least resistance. That's why clever people are never able to love. They are so clever. They start manipulating. They will not say what is in their heart. They will say what will appeal. They will look at the other person, what he wants to be said. They will not say they are harsh. They will just create a situation in which the other is deceived. Husband deceiving wives, wives deceiving husbands, friends deceiving friends. The whole world has become just a crowd of enemies. There are only two types of enemies. Those you have not been able to deceive and those you have been able to deceive. This is the only difference. Then how ecstasy can be in your life? So this is not a learning. Authenticity cannot come through schooling. Authenticity comes through awareness. If you are aware, if you live in a conscious way, look at the difference. To live consciously means to live openly, not to hide, not to play games. To be alert means to be vulnerable. And whatsoever happens, happens. You accept it. But you never compromise. You never purchase anything by giving your consciousness. Even if you are left totally alone, you would like to be left alone. But you would like to be consciously alert. Only in this alertness the real religion starts happening. I will tell you one story. It happened once in ancient days. One king who was also an astrologer, he had a very deep interest in studying his stars. Suddenly, there was panic in his heart because he became aware that the coming year's harvest is going to be dangerous. Whosoever will eat the coming year's harvest will go mad. So he calls his prime minister, his advisor and counselor, and told him that this is going to happen and this is certain. Stars are clear. The combination is such of cosmic rays that this year's harvest is going to be poisonous. It happens rarely in thousands of years, but this is going to happen this year. And anybody who will eat will go mad. So what should we do? The Prime Minister said, it is impossible to provide for everybody from the last year's harvest, but one thing can be done. You and I, we both can live on the last year's harvest. The last year's harvest can be gathered, requisitant. There is no problem. For you and me it will be enough. The king said, this doesn't appeal me. Then all my devoted people will go mad. Women, saints and sages, devoted servants, my all subjects, even children, it doesn't appeal to me to be an outsider. It will not be worth saving myself and you. That will not do. I would like better to be mad with everybody else. But I have another suggestion. I will mark your head with the seal of madness, and you mark my head with the seal of madness. But the Prime Minister said, how it is going to help anybody? The king said, I have heard. It is one of the ancient keys of wisdom. And let us try it. After everybody has gone mad, after we have gone mad, whenever I will look at your forehead, I will remember that I am mad. And whenever you look at my forehead, remember that you are mad. The Prime Minister is still puzzled. He said, but what? What it will do? The king said, I have heard from wise men that if you can remember that you are mad, you are no more mad. A madman cannot remember that he is mad. An ignorant man cannot remember that he is ignorant. A man who is in dream cannot remember that he is dreaming. If in your dream you become alert and know that you are dreaming, the dream has stopped. You are fully awake. If you can understand that you are ignorant, ignorance drops. Ignorant people go on believing that they are wise. And mad people think that they are really the only sane. When someone becomes really wise, he becomes by recognizing his ignorance. So the king said, this we are going to do. I don't know what happened. The story ends here. But the story is meaningful. Only alertness can help when the whole world is mad. Nothing else. Keeping yourself outside, going to the Himalayas will be of not much help. When everybody is mad, you are going to be mad because you are part and parcel of everybody. It is a totality, an organic totality. How can you separate yourself? How can you go to the Himalayas? Deep down, you remain part of the whole. Even living in the Himalayas, you will remember your friends. They will knock at your dreams. you will think of them. You will think what they are thinking of you. You go on being released. You cannot go out of the world. There is no place out of the world. The world is one continent. Nobody can be an island. And even islands are joined together deep down with the continent. You can just superficially think that you are separate. Nobody can be separate. The king was really wise. He said, it is not going to help. I am not going to be an outsider. I will be an insider. But this is what I will do. I will try to remember that I am mad. Because when you forget that you are mad, then you are really mad. This is what is to be done. Wherever you are, remember yourself that you are. This consciousness that you are should become a continuity, not what is your name, not what is your caste and nationality. Those are futile things, absolutely useless. Just that I am, this must not be forgotten. This is what Hindus call self-remembrance, what Buddha called right mindfulness, what Gurdjieff used to call self-remembering, what Krishnamurti calls awareness. This is the most substantial part of meditation, to remember that I am walking, sitting, eating, talking. Remember that I am. Never forget this. It will be difficult, very arduous. In the beginning you will go on forgetting. Only single moments will be there when you will feel illuminated. Then it is lost. But don't get miserable. Even single moments are too much. Go on. Whenever you can remember, remember again. Catch hold of the thread again. When you forget, don't worry. Remember again, again catch hold of the thread. By and by, gaps will be lesser. Intervals will start dropping. A continuity will arise. And whenever your consciousness becomes continuous, you need not use the mind. Then there is no planning. Then you act out of your consciousness, not out of your mind. Then there is no need for any apology. No need to give any explanation. Then you are whatsoever you are. Nothing is to hide. Whatsoever you are, you are. You cannot do anything else. You can only be in a continuous remembrance. Through this remembrance, mindfulness, comes the authentic religion, comes the authentic morality. The greatest politeness is free of all formality. Then you are not formal. Then nobody is a stranger. Whether you move in the marketplace or in a crowded street, nobody is a stranger. Everybody is a friend. Not only a friend, really everybody is just your extension. Then formality is not needed. If I step on my own foot, which is difficult, I will not say sorry. And I will not say to myself, the place is very crowded. When I step on your foot, I am stepping on my foot. A mind which is fully alert knows that consciousness is one, life is one, being is one, existence is one, it is not fragmented. The tree flowering there is me in a different form. The rock lying there on the ground is me in a different form. Then the whole existence becomes an organic unity, not mechanical unity. Organic, life flowing through it. A mechanical unity is a different thing, it is dead. A car is a mechanical unity. There is no life in it. And that's why you can put a part, replace it by another part. Every part is replaceable. But you can you replace a man? Impossible. When a mind dies, a unique phenomena disappears completely. You cannot replace. When your wife dies or your husband dies, now how can you replace? You may get another wife, but this will be another wife, not a replacement. And the shadow of the first will always be there. The first cannot be forgotten. It will always be there. It may become a shadow. But even shadows of love are very substantial. You cannot replace. There is no way. If it was a mechanical unity, then wives are replaceable parts. You can have even spare wives. You can keep them in your storeroom. Whenever your wife dies, you replace. This is what is happening in the West. They have started to think in terms of mechanism. So now they say nothing is a problem. One wife dies, you get another. One husband is no more, you get another. Replaceable. Then marriage in the West is a mechanical unity. That's why divorce is possible. The East denies divorce because it is an organic unity. How can you replace a live person? It will never happen again. That person has simply disappeared into the ultimate mystery. Life is an organic unity. When I say you cannot replace a plant, because every plant is unique, you cannot find another the same. Cannot be found. Life has a quality of uniqueness. Even a small rock is unique. You go all over the world to find a similar rock, you will not be able to find it. How can you replace it? This is the difference between organic unity and mechanical unity. Mechanical unity depends on the parts. The parts are replaceable. They are not unique. Organic unity depends on the whole, not on the parts. Parts are not really parts. They are not separate from the whole. They are one. They cannot be replaced. when you become alert of the inner flame of your inner being, suddenly you become alert that you are not an island. It is a vast continent, infinite continent. There are no boundaries separating you from it. All boundaries are false, make-believes. All boundaries are in the mind. In existence there is no boundary. Then, who is a stranger? Then you step on somebody, it is you. You have stepped on your own foot. No apology is needed. No explanation is needed. There is no one, there is only one. Then your life becomes real, authentic, spontaneous. Then it is not formal. Then you don't follow any rules. You have come to know the ultimate law. Now no rules are needed. You have become the law. There is no need to remember the rules now. The greatest politeness is free of all formality. Have you looked at people who are polite? You will not find more egoistic people than that. Look at a polite person. The very way he stands, the way he talks, the way he looks, walks, everything he has managed to look, to appear polite, but inside the ego is manipulated. Look at so-called humble people. They say, we are nobodies. But when they say, look in their eyes, the ego asserting. And this is a very cunning ego. Because if you say, I am somebody, everybody will be against you. And everybody will try to put you in your right place. If you say, I am nobody, everybody is for you. Nobody is against you. Polite people are very cunning, clever. They know what to say, what to do, so that they can exploit you. If they say, I am somebody, then everybody is against. Then conflict arises. Then everybody tries and thinks that he is an egoist man. It will be difficult then to exploit people. Because everybody is closed against you. You say, I am nobody. I'm just dust in your feet. Then the doors are open. And you can exploit all etiquette, culture is a type of sophisticated cunningness. But you are exploited. The greatest politeness is free of all formality. It happened. Confucius came to see Lao Tzu, Chuang Tzu's master. And Confucius is the image of formal politeness. He is the greatest formalist in the world. The world has never known such a great formalist. He is simply manners, formality, culture, etiquette. He came to see Lao Tzu, the polar opposite. Confucius was very old. Lardasi was not sold, so it was formal that when Confucius came, Lardasi stood stand up to receive him, but he remained sitting. It was impossible for Confucius to believe that such a great master, known all over the country for his humbleness, should be so impolite. He had to talk about it. Immediately he said, "This is not good. I am older than you. Lao Tzu laughed loudly and said, "Nobody is older than me." I adjusted before everything came into existence. Confucius, we are of the same age. Everything is of the same age. From eternity we have been in existence. So don't carry this burden of old age. Sit down. Confucius had come to ask two things. He said, how a religious man should behave. Lao Tzu said, when the how comes, there is no religion. How is not a question for a religious man. The how shows you are not religious, but you want to behave like a religious man. That's why you ask how. A lover asks how one should love. He loves. Really only later on he becomes aware that he has been in love. It may be that when love is gone, then he becomes aware that he has been in love. He simply loves. It happens. It is a happening, not a doing. Whatsoever Confucius asked, Lao Tzu replied in such a way that Confucius became very much disturbed. This man is dangerous. He came back. His disciples asked, what happened? What manner of man is this Lao Tzu? Confucius said, don't go near him. You may have seen dangerous snakes, but nothing to compare with this man. You may have heard about ferocious lions, nothing before this man. This man is a dragon. It walks on the earth, it can swim in the sea, it can go to the very end of the sky. Very dangerous. He is not for us little people, little persons. We are too smart. He is dangerous. Vast. Like an abyss. Don't go near him, otherwise you will feel dizzy. And you may fall. Even I felt dizzy. I couldn't understand what he is saying. He is beyond understanding. Lao Tzu is bound to be beyond understanding if you try to understand him through formality. Otherwise, he is simple. But for Confucius, he is difficult, almost impossible to be understood, because he looks through forms. And Lao Tzu has got no form and no formality, nameless, without any form. He lives in the infinite. The greatest politeness is free of all formality. Lao Tzu sitting, Confucius waiting for him to stand up. Who was really polite? Confucius waiting that Lao Tzu should stand up and welcome him and receive him because he is older. is just egoist. Now the ego is taking the form of oldness, seniority. But Confucius could not look directly in the eyes of Laozi. Otherwise, Laozi was right. He was saying, we are of the same age. Really, we are the same. The same life flows in you that flows in me. You are not superior than me. I am not superior than you. There is no question of superiority and inferiority. And there is no question of seniority and juniority. There is no question. We are one. If Confucius could have looked into the eyes, those eyes were divine. But a man whose eyes are filled with laws, rules, regulations, formalities, is almost blind. He cannot see. Perfect conduct is free of concern. You conduct well because you are concerned. You behave well because you are concerned. Just the other day, one man came and he said, I would like to take the jump. I would like to become a sannyasi. But my family is there. My children are studying in the colleges. And I have great responsibility towards them. He is concerned. He has a duty to fulfill, but no love. Duty is concern. It thinks in terms that something has to be done, because it is expected to be done. Because what people will say if I leave? Who thinks about what people will say? The ego. What people will say? So let me first fulfill my duties. I never say to anybody to leave. I never say anybody to renounce. But I insist that one should not be in some relationship because of duty. Because then the whole relationship is ugly. One should be in relationship because of love. Then this man will not say that I have a duty to fulfill. He will say, I cannot come right now. My love. My children are growing. And I love them. And I am happy working for them. Then this will be a happiness. Now it is not a happiness, it is a burden. And when you carry a burden, when even if you turn your love in a burden, you cannot be happy. And if you have turned your love in a burden, your prayer will also become a burden. Your meditation will also become a burden. Then you will say, because of this guru, this master, I am caught. And now I have to do this. It will not be out of you, your totality. It will not be overflowing. Why be worried? If love is there, wherever you are, there is no burden. And if you love your children, even if you leave them, they will understand. And if you don't love your children, you go on serving them. And they will never understand. And they will know these are just false things. This is happening. People come to me and they say, I've worked my whole life. And nobody even feels thankful towards me. How anybody can feel thankful towards me? You are carrying them like a burden. Even small children understand well when love is there. And they understand well when you are doing just as a duty. Duty is ugly. Duty is violent. It shows your concern, but doesn't show your spontaneity. Says Lao Tzu, perfect conduct is free of concern. Whatsoever is done out of love. You are not honest because honesty pays. You are honest because honesty is lovely. Even businessmen are honest if honesty pays. They say honesty is the best policy. How can you distrust beautiful things like honesty into a best policy? Policy is politics, honesty is religion. One old man was dying on his bed, on his deathbed. He called his son and said, "Now I must tell you the secret. Now I am dying. Remember two things. Always remember, this is how I succeeded. First, whenever you give a promise, fulfill it. Whatsoever the cost, be honest and fulfill it." This has been my base. This is why I succeeded. And the second thing, never give any promise. For a businessman, even religion is a policy. For a politician, even religion is a policy. Everything is a policy, even love is a policy. Kings, queens, never marry ordinary common people. Why? It is part of politics. Kings marry to other princes, queens. And the concern is with the kingdom. Which relationship will be more profitable? Two kingdoms will become related. They will become friends. They will not be antagonistic. So with whom the marriage should take place? In India, in old days, a king will marry many women. Hundreds, even thousands. That was part of politics. Because he will marry anybody's daughter who has some power. So he will create a network of power relationship. Because the person whose daughter you have married will become your friend. He will help you. In Buddha's time, India had 2,000 kingdoms. So the most successful king will be one who has got 2,000 wives from every kingdom. One wife from every kingdom. Then he can live in peace. Now there is no one who is antagonistic, inimical towards him. Now the whole country has become like a family. But how love can exist in such concerns? Love never thinks of consequences, never hankers for results. It is enough unto itself. Perfect conduct is free of concern. Perfect wisdom is unplanned. A wise man lives moment to moment, never planning. Only ignorant people plan. And when ignorant people plan, what they can plan? They plan out of their ignorance. Unplanned, they would have been better. Because out of ignorance, only ignorance arises. Out of confusion, only greater confusion is born. A wise man lives moment to moment. He has no planning. His life is just free, like a cloud floating in the sky, not going to some goal, not determined. He has no map for the future. He lives without a map. He moves without a map. Because the real thing is not the goal, the real thing is the beauty of the movement. The real thing is not reaching, the real thing is the journey. Remember, the real thing is the journey. The real traveling is so beautiful, why bother about the goal? And if you are too much bothered about the goal, you will miss the journey. And journey is life. The goal can only be the death. Journey is life, and it is an infinite journey. You have been on the move from the very beginning, if there was any beginning. Those who know say there has been no beginning. So from the no beginning, you have been on the move. To the no end, you will be on the move. And if you are goal-oriented, you will miss. Because the whole is the journey. The path, endless path. Never beginning, never ending. There is really no goal. Goal is created by the cunning mind. Where this whole existence is moving, where? It is not going anywhere. It is simply going. And the going is so beautiful. That's why existence is unburdened. There is no plan, no goal, no purpose. It is not a business. It is a play, a leela. Every moment is the goal. Perfect wisdom is unplanned. Perfect love is without demonstrations. Demonstration is needed because love is not there. And you demonstrate more when it is less. When it is there, you don't demonstrate. Whenever a husband comes to his house with some present for the wife, she must know that something has gone wrong. He must have stepped out of the way. He must have met some other woman. Now this is the explanation. This is a substitute. Otherwise, love is such a present, no other present is needed. Not that love will not give presents, but love itself is such a present. What else you can give? What else is possible? But whenever the husband feels something is wrong, he had to put it in the right. Everything has to be rearranged, balanced. And this is the problem, that women are so intuitive, they immediately know. Your present cannot deceive them. It is impossible. Because women still live with their intuition, with their illogical mind. They immediately jump. And they will understand that something has gone wrong. Otherwise, why this present? Whenever you demonstrate your inner poverty. If your sannyas becomes a demonstration, you are not a sannyas. If your meditation becomes a demonstration, you are not meditative. Because whenever the real exists, it is such a light. No need to demonstrate it. when your house is lighted, when there is a flame, you need not go to the neighbors and tell them, look, our house has got a lamp. It is there. But when your house is in darkness, you try to convince your neighbors that the light is there. Convincing them, you try to convince yourself, this is the base. Why you want to demonstrate? Because if the other is convinced, his conviction, her conviction will help you to be convinced. I have heard once Mullah Nasruddin had a beautiful house, but he got bored, as everybody gets bored. Whether it is beautiful or not, it makes no difference. Every day living in the same house, he got bored. The house was beautiful, with a big garden, acres of green land, swimming pool, everything, but he got bored. So he called a real estate agent and told him, I want to sell it. I'm fed up. This house has become a hell. Next day in the morning, papers came in advertisement. The real estate agent has put a beautiful advertisement. Mullah Nasruddin read it again, and he was so convinced, he phoned that, wait, I don't want to sell it. Your advertisement convinced me so deeply that now I know for the whole life I was after this house, looking for this house. When you can convince others about your love, you become convinced. But if you have love, there is no need. You know. When you have wisdom, no need to demonstrate it. But when you have only knowledge, you demonstrate it. You convince others. When they are convinced that you are a man of knowledge. When you have wisdom, there is no need. If not a single person is convinced, even then you are convinced. You alone are enough proof. Perfect sincerity offers no guarantee. All guarantees are because they are insincerity. You guarantee. You promise. You say, this is the guarantee. I will do this. While you are giving the guarantee, the very moment insincerity is there. Perfect sincerity offers no guarantee, because perfect sincerity is so aware of so many things. First, future is unknown. How can you make a guarantee? Life changes every moment. How can you promise? All guarantee, all promising can be only for this moment, not for the next. For the next moment, nothing can be done. You will have to wait. If you are really sincere and you love a woman, you cannot say, I will love you for my whole life. If you say, you are a liar. This guarantee is false. But if you love, this moment is enough. The woman will not ask for the whole life. This moment, if love is there, it is so fulfilling. One moment is enough for many lives. A single moment of love is eternity. She will not ask, but she is also asking, because this moment there is no love. So she asks, what is the guarantee? Will you love me always? This moment there is no love, and she is asking for a guarantee. This moment there is no love, and you guarantee for the future. Because only through that guarantee you can receive this moment. You can create a beautiful picture of the future, and you can hide the ugly picture of the present. You say, yes, I will love you forever, forever. Even death will not depart us. What nonsense! What insincerity! How can you do this? You can do this, and you do it so easily, since you are not aware of what you are saying. The next moment is unknown. Where it will lead, no one knows. What will happen, no one knows. No one can know it. Unknowability is part of the future game. How can you guarantee? You can say at the most, I love you this moment. And this moment I feel. And this is the feeling of this moment that even death cannot depart. But this is the feeling of this moment. This is not a guarantee. This moment I feel like saying that I will be always and always loving you. But this is the feeling of this moment. This is no guarantee. What will happen in the future, nobody knows. We never knew about this moment. How can we know about other moments? We will have to wait. We will have to be prayerful that it happens, that I love you forever and ever. But this is not a guarantee. Perfect sincerity cannot give any guarantee. Perfect sincerity is so sincere, it cannot promise. It gives whatsoever it can give here and now. Perfect sincerity lives in the present. It has no idea of the future. Mind moves in the future. Being lives here and now. And perfect sincerity belongs to the being, not to the mind. Love, truth, meditation, sincerity, simplicity, innocence, all belong to the being. The opposites belong to the mind. And to hide the opposites, the mind creates false coins, false sincerity, which guarantees promises, false love, which is just the name of guilt, false beauty, which is just a face for inner ugliness. Mind creates false coins, and nobody is deceived. Remember, except yourself. Enough.